Well, I was expecting to see all kinds of new behaviors as you walked in, maybe sitting down differently or something along those lines. So I trust that they are appropriately contexted somewhere else. Yes. So how was your experience with that? What did you, how did it go? So you got a message, revelation, a message out of it. Ah. By the way, while I'm thinking about it, when you're sharing, like when we're in this configuration and you're sharing or asking a question, it's really helpful if you speak up loud enough so that everybody in the room can hear. I've gotten some feedback that people in the back of the room can't hear, especially if you're near the front of the room. So even if you're in the front of the room, if it's helpful, you could even stand up and kind of project the voice a little bit more so that we can all hear you. Other sharing, other questions? That's nice. Lots of interesting elements in what you shared there as far as, you know, associating and dissociating is actually a skill, you know, and you may be more comfortable with one or the other kind of a thing. And some of you may have developed that skill that you can associate and dissociate very, very easily. And so noticing that about yourself, again, we're learning more about ourselves and expanding our range so that you discover which one is the more difficult one. And then that's, of course, the one you want to practice. That's the one you want to give more attention and energy to so that you can more easily, especially coming from the place of an NLP practitioner, okay, that you want to have more of that flexibility, more of that range. And then I liked what you said about future pacing, how once you really got into it and you got out there, things shifted just in doing that, you know, that you stepped into it. That to me sounded like good installation, that it really took, and now other things started to organize with it. So, well done. Yeah.
So, on the first day, you said that you could change anybody's behavior in about 15 minutes. Is this the process you would use for that, or is it part of a larger process set that you would go for?
So, I think what I was referring to there is there are certain processes that'll make change that quickly. Like, for example, the phobia process or the allergy process can happen in as quickly as, you know, 15, 20 minutes type of a thing. But I don't know that I would generalize that to all behavior. You could change anybody's behavior in 15 minutes. Because some things are more complex. Some things may take multiple processes.
So problem-specific processes.
Yes.
That would help you, like phobia, process A versus this, process B, so on.
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. Anybody else? Yeah.
So, if in the process of trying to change a certain behavior, it turns out that there's something more to it, like there's hidden feelings and hidden beliefs and So without going deeper and deeper into that, is it still possible to change the behaviors in this process?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is possible. And as your skill grows as a practitioner, you'll have more tools and things to address, because sometimes things like that do happen. You think you're working on one thing, and then all of a sudden something else shows up, or it's more complex than it seemed at first. And you'll have more skills to address it. And sometimes you make the decision to, I'm going to separate these. Like with the coffee example, I would have done a completely separate process with the coffee. And so I just focused on, you know, what we were, you know, what I could work on with that process, kind of a thing. So you'll get more tools, more ways to discriminate, how to make those judgments as you go, kind of a thing. But not really nice observation, because especially when you're first learning, you know, it's a little, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, it was intimidating, you know, I work with somebody and then some real big emotional thing would come up and I was like, I have no idea what to do with this, kind of a thing. And that's why the resource people are here and so on. So just be mindful of that. You know, you've got a lot of support here and to help you work things, think it through and just say, okay, we're going to take that piece of it, set it aside, maybe do some different work with it, or maybe somebody else could do it. And we're just going to focus on this piece that works well with this process.
And then when we got it down to what I was comfortable with, she goes, okay, now physically step into that movie. And then I became associated, but it was through an activity that just made it much more palpable that we had, you know, merged that in my physical body.
Yeah. We're going to, as we get into this afternoon, we're going to be talking about spatial anchors, okay? How you can set up spaces to do different things. And that's actually a really an elegant way sometimes of helping somebody dissociate, is like if they get maybe unresourceful or something, you have them step out of it and leave the feelings there. Or if you were in chairs, you'd have them move from one chair to another perhaps. There's lots of neat little ways of helping facilitate association versus dissociation. The movie screen thing, sometimes we use plexiglass shields, sometimes just even the mental act of floating above. I mean, that's a difficult thing to do in your body, right? Unless you have mastered levitation. So, you know, but to mentally go up above and look down on the situation, you almost have to dissociate to be able to do that. So, yeah, so that's good that you discovered that. And some of you, you know, like I say, we have a mixed group, so some people have more skills and learning and other things than others. And so as you're working together, you're going to be working with different people with different skill and knowledge levels. Yeah?
One thing that I noticed as we were working is that Wayne said, can you picture that? And I'm pretty good at putting a picture out there, but he was right here.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put my picture, it goes, you know, kind of hit there. And then Mike suggested that maybe if I, and then turning it around, that I stand at the side. If I'm going to have him picture it, mm-hmm. then he can picture it instead of mine being right in front of him. So for me, that worked a little bit better. Stand more to the side so that I can put my picture out there.
Right.
My picture goes out a little ways. So, you know, just, you know,
sure, you don't want to crash it in.
Right, right.
Well, I'm so glad you brought it up. It is a technical point that I wanted to share with you. When I did the demonstration with Sebastian, okay, there were several times when I attempted to do that, okay, and I was trying to get him to make pictures over here, and that wasn't working for him.
Yeah, so
I honored that, and I just stayed front. In general, though, it is preferred to stand side by side when you're working with somebody for the very reason you just said. It gives them space to visualize, you know, so and you're not... One, you're not absorbing. We have a tendency, you know, as part of our culture, when you're interacting with somebody, to pay attention to them, to look at them, to attend to them. And so it creates a split attention sometimes if you're trying to, you know, interact with somebody right in front of you and making pictures in your head. And so it's useful to be side by side when you're doing NLP in general. Now, there may be exceptions to everything, right? You may have working with somebody and maybe they're not, you know, conscious of their visualization at all. They're more present to auditory or their kinesthetics. And so it wouldn't matter that much for them. So again, as your skill builds, you'll be able to make those discriminations and choices. But as a trainer modeling a process, and it sounded like you modeled really well. You were out there, you know, in front of each other doing it the way I demonstrated it, you know, and that's a good thing. So this gives you now more choice, right? To be side by side, give people space to picture. There's another thing happens with anchoring too. If, for example, you were right in front of somebody and say a very unresourceful state pops up and you're right in their visual field, okay? So now you may inadvertently be anchored to this state. And it can happen with a very resourceful state too. But it's an unintended element in the process that now you're anchored. Your face or some feature or something like that is anchored to this state. And so now, you know, you show up in all these other places where it may or may not serve, may or may not be helpful. And especially if they're negatively anchored to you, then now it may interfere with doing other work in the future, and you may have to do some shift around that. Even like, I don't want to work with them anymore because I have this negative anchor now. So that's another element. The usefulness of doing it standing up, and this is something that Tim strongly recommends. And so when you're standing up, you actually have more access to your neurology and their neurology, and you can observe more of what's going on. And it's partly, you know, when we explored in psychogeography, you know, your how much you're taking in can shift depending on, I mean, the way your feet are, the way you're standing, those kinds of things. So Tim often recommends that it's helpful to do these processes standing. Now, again, as your skills grow and your ability to discriminate, you would make the choice based on what's useful. If you're doing spatial anchors, for example, and you're moving people around, obviously standing up is going to be helpful. But if you're sitting and you're doing a process that doesn't involve spatial anchoring, you've got good rapport with the other person, you know, then there's, you know, if there's no obvious benefit to standing up, there's no problem doing it sitting. I mean, I've done NLP processes in all kinds of different things where I'm laying on the couch and my son's over there on the other couch, you know, and we're doing a process we've been in rapport most of our lives. And I don't have to worry about establishing rapport in that moment, kind of a thing. So again, you'll start thinking of what is useful in the moment for what we're doing. And if it's serving, keep doing that. If it's not serving, shift in some way. And as you're growing your skills and stuff, this judgment builds. It's just like anything else. You get better at it. You start to be able to make those wiser choices as to what's going on. Does that help with that?
So you'd say a lot of the processes are
outstanding. Yeah, I believe that. That's true in my experience, that it's useful to do certain things standing up because, again, I can see more of the person, what's going on, I can pick up on more subtle cues. There's usually more activation in both of your neurology, and so there's just more to work with than if you're sitting and being relatively still. And that's not to say that it can't be done successfully sitting, because that certainly can. So the general recommendation is, especially when you're first learning, do them standing, and then as your skill grows, you'll be able to make those discriminations.
The
NLP pi. You want some pie? Before I go into this, any other questions or comments about the new behavior generator process?
One really interesting thing that happened for us is that I think we really broadened our idea of what is a resource. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a slippery concept, but Nancy helped us to kind of come to the realization that it's not necessarily an activity or even an ability. For instance, it could be awareness, mm-hmm. which is what was really useful for me in that exercise. So I think that's still something I'm trying to get a handle on, exactly what is a resource. And it's a pretty broad mm-hmm. range of things.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a believer, and other NLP trainers have said similar things, that any quality we possess as human beings could be a resource or a limitation. Now, it's a broad generalization, and of course, you know, there could be exceptions out there somewhere. But our idea is that every behavior is useful in some context. So whether you're thinking in terms of thinking, feeling, behaviors, that kind of thing, in the right context to the right degree, it could be a powerful resource. In the wrong context or the wrong degree, the exact same thing might be a problem, might be a limitation. I mean, think of confidence. You know, many people would say confidence is a good thing. You know, it's a nice resource to have. But what if it's too much confidence? What does that come across like? Like arrogance or cockiness, right? Or what happens if your confidence is way ahead of your competence? You know, we don't want any more of them in the world, I'm telling you. Okay? Plenty of people like that, way too confident, not very competent. But what happens if it's the other way? Right? You're a highly competent person, but you don't have the confidence to really engage your gifts or your talents, resources. So too much or too little is a limitation. But if your confidence matches your competence, that's bliss. That's when it's really powerful, kind of a thing. Or friendliness, think of friendliness. You know people who are a little too friendly, okay? They invade your space, or I used to call them cube campers when I worked for the state. You know, these people would come in and they would plop themselves in my cube and they want to talk about their weekend at the coast and socialize and things, you know, and that's, you know, I can handle that for a little bit, but it's like, you know, I got a task to do. And so, you know, sometimes I had to say, you know, I'd love to talk more about this with you. Can we do lunch or something like that so that we could have that opportunity maybe some other time? But, you know, it got to a point where it's like every day this person was occupying an hour or two of my time just popping in. So friendliness, too much friendliness, limitation, or not enough friendliness. Of course, you probably all experience that too. Somebody's really cold or even mean or something like that. Too much or too little. But it's finding that just right where it serves, where it's useful. And having, and again, like I mentioned the other day, having the wisdom to find the threshold. Where's the threshold where it crosses from limitation to resource or resource to limitation? And you could apply that to, like you say, any quality that we have as human beings.